Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. On this Politics Monday, we turn to an important and growing segment of the voting population in our region and around the nation, the Latino community. In 2020, that community played a significant role in helping President Biden win, but Biden isn't running this time. And some polls indicate that a portion of the support in that community has shifted to Donald Trump. In fact, the shift within the Latino community from Democrats to Republicans is a decade-long trend. One possible reason is the criticism that Democrats have treated Latino voters as a monolith. They are not. And the Harris campaign is said to be taking a different approach to that group, as one made up of individuals with differing interests, but also with the same basic values of all Americans. So, what are Latino voters looking for in the candidates they vote for? What are the issues most important to them? And when you consider that 13 million Latinos are eligible but not registered to vote, what would their impact be if registration efforts were successful? For answers to those questions and more, we turn to Diego Barahona, editor for Charlotte's La Noticia, that's a Spanish language newspaper. Jose Hernandez Perez is chief executive officer of the Latin American Coalition. And Stefania Arteaga is co-director of the Carolina Migrant Network. Welcome to you all. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Jose, let me start with you. Do you think that Democrats have treated Latinos like a monolith? Do you think that's a fair criticism, not recognizing them as individuals? And do you believe that that is what created whatever trend there may be for Latinos to gravitate toward Republicans and toward Donald Trump?
I think if you talk to many Latinos, they will feel that they've been taken for granted by the Democratic Party. And many of the issues that we care about have not fully been resolved or addressed. And we tend to feel that we only seem important when election time comes, especially as close as they are nowadays. So I do think it has created a shift. But I think the biggest shift for what I've seen is not going to the Republican Party. I think there's a shift. More and more people are becoming unaffiliated and independent. It's the fastest growing group of any of the three groups, as well as a lot of empathy, people not wanting to just participate in the political, especially a lot of young people are disenfranchised right now.
In terms of being taken for granted, if you're accurate about that, what has been ignored? What are people most peeved about?
I think local, state, and federally, there are different things. I think in North Carolina, particularly at the state level, is the lack of opportunity for local young people to be able to pay in-state tuition, for example, even though they should qualify through DACA and TPS and other options, which should allow them to pay in-state tuition, which forces them to have two or three jobs in order to try to stay in school. At the federal level, immigration reform is always top. We have had people that have been with temporary status or no status for over 30 years now. And of course, that's a whole generation of individuals and children.
But does the blame for that lay at the feet of Democrats, at the feet of Republicans, or at the feet of both parties?
Yeah, I think the blame is the feet of politics. I think we're used as political tools by all parties, and that's why I think you're seeing the division that we're seeing right now within politics. I don't think it's one or the other. I think there's both, because when one has had the opportunity to do something, they haven't done it, and then when the other one has the chance to block something that they may be doing, then they'll block it. But politics.
Diego, Vice President Harris campaign manager Julie Chavez Rodriguez, who is the granddaughter, incidentally, of Cesar Chavez, if her campaign is taking a different approach toward Latino voters, is that the reason, the fact that Julie Chavez Rodriguez is in charge of this campaign, or the vice president's own understanding of what it means to have your identity defined on the basis of race and/or gender? Is that playing a role in this shift? And more importantly, is this shift, if you see it as one, being noticed by the Latino community?
Well, I have noticed a lot of things in this campaign. One of them is they are following these trends, these polls, what is important for Latinos, which creates a vacuum. I will talk about that in a second. Unidos, which is a nonpartisan organization, they conduct this poll to see how what are the priorities for Latino voters in North Carolina. So number one is no mystery, inflation. Number two, jobs and the economy. Number three, lack of affordable housing. Number four, in North Carolina, health access to healthcare. Number five, crime. And number six, immigration. That being said, as you mentioned at the beginning, Latinos are not a monolith. We struggle with the same problems in the economy. And the Harris campaign has been pitching about ideas to help small businesses and so on. But there is a lack of promises, at least in immigration. We have promises of immigration reform and also fails from Barack Obama, from Joe Biden. And in this case, we haven't heard much about immigration reform from the Harris campaign.
Stefania, and anyone on both sides of the aisle will tell you that the United States has a broken immigration system, and there doesn't seem to be much political will, as Diego just pointed out, to try and take steps to fix that. Both parties have taken different approaches. The former Trump administration took a hard line on the border, building a piece of a wall, also taking some migrants and putting them in cages and separating families and deporting them. Democrats have taken a softer line on this, with the result being let immigrants flooded across the border for a period of time until President Biden took a stronger stance late in his administration. But he did try to get a bipartisan immigration bill passed in Congress that had support, was going to pass until Donald Trump urged his fellow Republicans in the Congress not to vote for it because it would hurt his presidential campaign. So it was shot down. What would the average Latino voter tell you about immigration and how we are handling it, particularly across the southern border?
Well, that is a very good question. So first, let me tell you about the Latino voters we have in Mecklenburg County and across the state. The average age range for Latino voters is 25. Primarily, these voters are young, they are first gen, and they're also folks that are living in mixed status households who understand the complexity of the immigration system and being a North Carolinian. And so going back to also to what Diego said, a lot of these young folks are interested in figuring out what their life outcomes will be in a state where we are not we're getting up there, right? After the recent new Chevy report that came out with upward mobility, but we still have a lot more to see. And as far as what's going on, in terms of immigration, we're hearing different rhetorics, right, across the aisles. But at the end of the day, we're seeing a similar stance around enforcement rather than solutions. And what voters know, these young folks, is that their vote matters in terms of making decisions for their families. Most of our young people live in mixed status, intergenerational households. And so they understand the struggles of their loved ones.
You're the co-director of the Carolina Migrant Network, so you're deeply involved in all of this. From your point of view, how should we fix this broken immigration system of ours, that both sides, Republicans and Democrats, agree needs fixing?
That's a great question. I think that not a and not does not have one easy solution. But what we can agree on is that there's a lot of xenophobia and anti-immigrant rhetoric where we are at this point in our country. And what we need to understand is there's large contributions to North Carolina by immigrant neighbors. I just want to note that a lot of the migration that we're seeing is a net plus for our communities. It is helping with our economy. It's contributing to our agricultural system and our tech and education systems as well.
Jose, Mike Madrid, who's a Republican strategist who focuses on Latinos and was the co-founder of the anti-Trump Lincoln Project, says, quote, there is no question that the Harris campaign is 180 degrees different with Latino voters than any other Democratic candidate in history. Do you agree with that? And if so, how?
I think this is interesting year of politics, as we have all seen, and the fact that we have a candidate that's running whose parents are migrants, racially mixed, with a strong background, and that is once again showing that America is advancing, and hopefully has the opportunity to maybe elect a woman candidate. I think the experience that she has had throughout this vice presidency will be very useful for us. I think I've seen efforts for her, for example, to reach out to Central American countries to try to address the migration issue, you know, and the challenge that these countries are facing, and to see how America may be able to work closer with these countries, not in enforcement, but in support to help their economies and help the people address the challenges they're facing so that they don't have to migrate.
If I'm understanding you correctly, that may come as a surprise to a lot of people, particularly Republicans, because Donald Trump has said repeatedly on the campaign trail that Vice President Harris was in charge with immigration and she did nothing.
Yes, and that's the rhetoric, we use the word assault, you know, the assault on the migrant community, all of us, you know, whether you came here with a visa or whether you crossed the border looking for asylum or other source of safety, running away from many challenges that these communities are running away from. In reality, if people take a look, she was named the czar of migration just as a political point, but this was because she was appointed by Biden, if people look it up, to try to reach out to those Central American countries to see how we may be able to address some of the challenges. Because migration doesn't start at the border. Migration starts before that, and we have neglected our southern neighbors.
Jose Hernandez Perez is chief executive officer of the Latin American Coalition. Diego Barahona is editor of La Noticia, and Stefania Arteaga is co-director of the Carolina Migrant Network. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaOfSouthCharlotte.com. And it's right back to Charlotte Talks we go, and our conversation about Latino voters with Diego Barahona, who is editor of La Noticia, Jose Hernandez Perez, chief executive officer for the Latin American Coalition, and Stefania Arteaga, co-director of the Carolina Migrant Network. Diego, what do you think is the most misunderstood, least understood thing about Latinos and Latino voters by the political parties and by most average citizens?
And also take it for granted. When I say that is because I'm not exaggerated when I say that Latinos might elect the next president. Just remember in 2020, Trump won North Carolina for less than 50,000 votes. So in North Carolina, we have around 300,000 voters registered right now. And just in Mecklenburg, we are around 50,000 voters, Latino voters registered right now. So if Latinos go to the polls, that might change this close election. Remember just what happened a few years ago in District 9, in just 400 votes determined an election between Harris and McCready. So we are getting to closer elections, every vote count, and we underestimate that Latinos here in Mecklenburg represent around 4% of the electoral vote. So we haven't seen this effort, this conscious effort to reach this community as much as we would love to. We haven't seen candidates listen to the needs of this community. The other problem about don't understand how complex these voters are is that we don't have representation. We're talking up the microphones, so of how many Latinos are candidates in this election. We have just four, there are 170 legislative seats for this November. If for both parties, we have only four Latino candidates running for this election, two Republicans, two Democrats. From then, only Jordan Lopez is going to win because he's running unopposed to represent the State House District 112. That's part of the East of Charlotte. Locally, we have also Susan Rodriguez McDowell. She is running again for District 6 for the County Commission. And we have Liz Monterrey, of course. She is running for the, she won the, her CMS large seat in 2023. So we have this huge population in the county and the state. We are around 10% of the population. However, we have few and few Latino candidates. So there is a lack of listening in this group. There is a lack of there's an underestimate the power of this group and also the lack of representation.
Stefania, for those who are not born in this country, maybe they've been here for 20 years, maybe they arrived last week, but as they achieve citizenship and the right to vote, do they have a tradition of that from the countries from which they have come, or do they have a different view of how elections are conducted and the honesty of those elections? Do they see a value in voting, given from some of the situations in Latin America and South America where they may have lived prior to coming here?
A great question. Going back to Latinos aren't a monolith. There's over 20 countries that are represented in North Carolina of Latin America for Latin Americans, and all have terrible histories with dictatorships, primarily on the right in the 80s and the 70s, and have ha been victims of forced migration. And so these populations are coming with this historic understanding of what elections have meant for them in their home countries. But then when we break down and look at the electorate itself, what we're seeing is that the large chunk of Latinos in North Carolina are actually US citizens. And these are folks who are building and creating the fabric of what being a Latino in the South means, and also defining what that is going to look like. One of the work that we do, some of the work that we do at the Carolina Migrant Network is working with young voters, ages 18 to 30, to talk to them about the importance of voting, but also about the rich history that we can build together at this point to go to the polls and make a difference, and really show our numbers. It is a tough demographic to work with. We have to admit that, right? We know that historically young people aren't going to the polls, but what's important is that in North Carolina, we're living through history. We're creating history as we go. We're creating a culture. We're creating an understanding of what it means to be a Latino voter, and how to do so. And so one of the great things that we've been doing is working with student organizations at UNC campus. It's a PWI, but it has one of the largest Latino student enrollment in the UNC system, of which the vast majority of these students are US citizens and will be voting for the first time this election. And so a lot of the conversations we're having with these young folks is actually about excitement. Excitement to be the first to vote in these elections.
May I
add
Jose,
something?
go
May I
ahead.
add something to that? Because
Sure.
it's fascinating how young Latinos right now are getting activated after Harris' announcement, at least. Culturally speaking, we are really passionate about two things: soccer and politics. We love to talk about politics and soccer. Now, that being said, why are so few participating in elections? You have, on the one side, a party that is demonizing immigrants, that talking about eating cats and dogs and stuff like that, talking about migrant crime waves, which are not sustained in reality. And in the other side, we have a lot of disappointment, a lot of promises that were not true. So in that's one of the things that parties need to understand. You have a huge potential group, a demographic that are passionate to express their vote, but you need to gain their trust.
Jose, a few minutes ago, Diego mentioned this Unidos US poll. This is the largest Latino civil rights and advocacy organization, and they conducted a survey of registered Latino voters nationwide and revealed that inflation, as he mentioned before, inflation, wages, affordable housing at the top of the list of their concerns in this election. Is that, in fact, reflective of the Latino community in North Carolina? What political candidates at the various levels, state and federal, even local, are addressing those concerns?
Yeah. We recently had a watch party at the coalition where we invited people the from non-political from different party different parties, different affiliations, to just watch the latest debate and had a conversation about that. And in that group, it reflects really the biggest concerns with young and older folk nationally. In that conversation, there was a fear of left versus right. People that came from countries like Venezuela are very afraid the fact that that we may be leaning too far left and that we're becoming a communist country. The individuals on the right are afraid. On the left are afraid that we're about to lose our democracy. We're about to get another dictator like the ones Stefania mentioned that we've escaped from our own communities and we can see the signs and the signals and we're like, hey, America, be careful, right? There's Palestine. Palestine is a big deal. It's a big deal for young people, particularly the ones that have come from communities that have been oppressed and that have escaped war. It's very personal, very, very personal. I think the issues part of it, it has become broader than immigration, and it's very reflective according to the different sub demographics of the views of the mainstream America.
Stephanie, for Democrats, abortion rights is a key talking point, has been for Vice President Harris on the campaign trail. Is that resonating with the Latino community, or do they have a different perspective on abortion rights?
Well, what I can say is when we talk to young voters is that they do care about bodily autonomy. They do care about their ability to choose and make decisions for themselves. What we also know is that we're also seeing the side effects of still the COVID-19 pandemic. We know that Latinos have primarily been the folks at the forefront in construction, cleaning, and healthcare. Ensuring that this country continue to move. And so apart from bodily autonomy, that's why the economy is such a big issue for our community. And then when we continue to look down further at the data, we know that Latinos are more likely to start their own businesses. I remember being at a Bank of America presentation a couple of years ago when they talked about the Latino GDP in Mecklenburg County. And the historian talked about Latinos being liquid gold for Mecklenburg County. And so certainly these are issues that resonate with voters, right? Where we care a lot more than just immigration. We care about our ability to just have civil rights.
But I am curious about the abortion issue, because you refer to it as bodily autonomy, which is the positioning of the Democratic Party vis-a-vis the abortion. But a lot of Latinos are heavily Catholic, and the Catholic Church takes a completely different point of view on what they call abortion. They don't call it bodily autonomy. How is that tightrope being walked?
That is a great question. As a woman who has had an abortion herself, I think that what we do among community members is just have conversations around what does that mean as people who have been, come from countries where reproductive justice access was not accessible, right? But now, going back and looking at what's happening in Latin America and the excitement of seeing countries like Mexico, Argentina, giving access to reproductive health care is significant. And most importantly, I think, going back to just storytelling, for me as a young Latina, meeting other Latinas who had access to reproductive care was significant also in solidifying the fact that I was not alone.
Diego, the same survey that you referenced a little while ago, the UNIDOS U.S. survey, indicated that nearly half of the people taking that survey, 49%, said they had not been contacted by anyone from either party. Given how razor-thin the margins are likely to be in this election, the razor-thin margin between victory and defeat, Could outreach make the difference in this community? If more Democrats and candidates contact the Latino community, could that shift their vote toward that in that
Absolutely, I
direction?
do believe so. They have the money, they have the people, they need to do the work. I have seen great work from non-profit organizations such as the Like a micro network such as the Latin American Coalition, Winnie Mateo Pascual also, we have been encouraging our people to vote, to register and vote. And those organizations has been doing a great job. What I haven't seen it much is political parties knocking doors, reaching out to festivals, reaching out to people, reaching out to churches, and sent a clear message for those voters. And appealing for why their candidate is the best. Speaking, for instance, this issue about abortion, I have heard from people from churches, from other people in the Latino community that that's a big problem for them, the cultural wars, and they are leaning Republican because of that. However, we have young voters here. The majority of our voters in Melkenburg are young. Someone has been talking to them from the Democrat Party about these issues. I haven't heard anything. And again, they have the money, they have the people, they need to do a better job.
Jose, both political parties have sent their standard bearers to North Carolina countless times. Trump and Vance and Harris and Walz have all been here more times than I can count. Anderson Clayton, or Clayton Anderson, I always get her name wrong. She's the chair of the Democratic Party in North Carolina, has been pointed in trying to develop. Anderson Clayton, there you go. Trying to get her party's message out to voters. How do you explain that no one's spoken to Latino voters about these things?
Well, I think part of it is that we also have to reach out. As Latinos, we also have a responsibility to be engaged. And like the group Latino Tu Voto Cuenta, which is the group that is also leading a lot of the effort, they're focusing a lot on getting people out to vote, because registration efforts are strong, but in the last election, statewide, only 3 to 4% of Latinos voted, statewide, and so we need to get people to vote. As far as myself, I've been reached out, actually, a little too much. I'm just getting texts, emails, calls. But it's because I've been engaged and I'm in the radar.
How difficult is it to reach some of these? Years ago in another life, I used to produce radio commercials. And when we produced them for Spanish language radio stations, some of the stations wouldn't carry them because the script had been written by somebody who, from a Mexican language, from a Mexican Spanish point of view versus a Colombian Spanish point of view. And the announcer that we chose to speak those words was readily identifiable by Latinos as being from various different parts of Latin America or South America. And they wouldn't listen to that message because it didn't come from their group. So that's a real indication that this is not a monolith. They are influenced by the countries from which they came, from which their families grew up. So how do you reach these people?
Well, you have to go where they are, you know? Because just a quick example of what happened in COVID vaccines. A couple of years ago, the government were issued these COVID vaccines, and one of the fewest people that received those COVID vaccines were Latinos. So the Roy Cooper start this program, start working with the organization, start working with clinics, going to flea markets, going to churches, going to organizations. And then Latinos were the number one group that received the COVID vaccine. So if you want to reach them, you don't have to expect that they come to you. You have to go to them.
Stephanie, I know you want to talk about this. I have to take a break, but when we come back, I will let you chime in on what we're talking about, how you reach these various subgroups of the Latino community and what it means to them to be reached. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. And we're back with more Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE, along with WFAE.org. We're talking about Latino voters, the power of Latino voters, what issues concern them most, how their participation could change the outcome of this and future elections, with Diego Barahona, editor of La Noticia. I'll get it right. Help me out here,
Very good.
Diego.
La noticia.
La noticia. Thank you very much. Jose Hernandez Paris is Chief Executive Officer of the Latin American Coalition, and Stefania Arteaga is Co-Director of the Carolina Migrant Network. I promised you, Stefania, that you'd have a chance to answer that question we were talking about just before the break about how you reach this group of people, because there are so many subgroups of people who have allegiances and customs that are different from each other.
Oh my God, Mike, I love that question. Let me just start with that, because I think this is the most exciting part of this all, this opportunity to engage young Latino voters. First, let me share with you the demographics of who Latino voters are. Primarily, they're Mexican. Second is Puerto Rican. And then we have Central Americans, with mostly being Salvadorans. And what's extremely exciting about the ways that we're engaging with Latino voters is that we're bringing it back to los dichos, the sayings. What are the things that are motivating people that bring us back and connect us to our roots, but also incentivize us to get back and really engage with the electoral process? So one of the things that we've been playing around and engaging with these young voters has been around, like, what were the dichos that your parents told you when they wanted you to care about something? And so, because our target demographic is 18 to 25 mostly, just like ponte las pilas y vota have been literally quotes that young people have resonated with. Órale, a votar, a votemos ya. We have been playing games like Mika or Simon Says to just talk about voting, what is in your ballot, but also having fun while doing so. And going back to what Diego was saying, you know, meeting us where we're at, we're going to Las Pulgas, the flea markets, we're going to the Latin American Festival to make sure that we engage with voters who are going to be voting for the first time and know that they're not alone in that process. So I think meeting people to where they're from every year until 2040, we will have 20,000 new Latino voters eligible to vote that are turning 18. That is significant.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to reflect upon that and really think about the type of programming we want to offer that is culturally competent, linguistically competent, and also meeting people where they're at.
Diego, last Friday, Governor Roy Cooper vetoed HB 10. That's gotten the most attention because it expands the school voucher program by hundreds of millions of dollars. But it would also mandate that local law enforcement cooperate with ICE, the sheriffs around various sheriffs around the state who have been refusing to do so, as well as members of the Latino community, have sometimes said that cooperating with ICE would make the community less safe, because it would raise fears in that community about coming forward about anything, a crime being committed or anything like that. But Cooper's veto is likely to be overturned by the GOP supermajority in the General Assembly. So what do you see as the impact of this on the Latino community?
Unfortunately, this is part of the political theater. Every election year, you find this practice of this kind of harsh immigration laws from states. This year, we have this kind of legislation in North Carolina, Texas, Florida, Tennessee, Iowa, Oklahoma, and Louisiana, because we're in election year. They want to show that they are tough in immigration, but immigration is a federal matter. It's a federal issue, not a state's issue. States do not have the authority to create their own immigration policies. These anti-immigrant laws are harmful for the economy. They're prone to racial discrimination. They are detrimental to the relationships between the law enforcement officers and the community. And it's reprehensible that politicians, knowing this, continue to spread fear to gain some votes. In this case, it's probably that this law will stop, like it happened in Texas and like happened also in Arizona some years ago, that happened just recently in Florida. They will be stopped in the courts because it's unconstitutional. And again, it's just part of the political theater, is terrorizing this group, immigrants, in order to gain the right vote, which is despicable in every way.
Stefania, you've worked for years, as I understand it, to push back on both ICE and local law enforcement cooperating with ICE. Is this a big enough political issue among registered Latino voters to have a political impact at any level?
I think that's a great question. You know, back when Latino voters took to the polls in 2018 to make a decision on the sheriff's election, we saw a significant increase in Latino turnout because of that very issue. If I'm not mistaken, we had seen the Latino May primary turnout almost rise to 100% that election alone. And so certainly Latinos understand what collaboration with local law enforcement means. We know that in Mecklenburg County, children of foreign born parents were born with significantly lower birth weights, which lead to generation poor outcomes to their health, education, and success. We know that also part of this bill also includes the defunding of public education. And when we look at public education across the state, in Mecklenburg County specifically, 30% of students over 30% of students in Mecklenburg County are Latino. So this is an issue that certainly impacts us not only through the enforcement of trying to deputize sheriffs, but also through the education perspective.
Jose, I want to get your perspective on both these aspects. Is it more dangerous? Is this going to be an issue that will cause people to go to the polls and vote against it by voting for a particular candidate? And even though education, public education, is one of the top concerns of most Latino voters, these opportunity scholarships apply to them as well. They can take that money and they can go to private schools. Does that blunt some of that concern?
Yeah, this particular issue upsets me so much because it's not just about politics, but I think it's just straight out racism. And what they did, I was in a meeting last week talking about a statewide policy for healthcare, and HB 10 was brought up there, and I was like, "Well, why HB 10?" And what they did, they attached HB 10 to many of the key issues that voters talk about, so that if you vote down HB 10, you will vote down many of the financial support for many of the programs, like domestic violence, which affects the Latino community so much. So HB 10 is completely connected to domestic violence, because if the victims are afraid to call the police, then they're less likely to receive assistance. And so to be so low to attach a bill to human rights, basically, and assistance of people, and it's just incredible. And so I was really surprised to hear that there. And you mentioned the HB 1074, which is going to be in the ballots. People are going to be voting to take out of the North Carolina Constitution, to take out a sentence which is basically, it just says, every person born in the United States and every person who has been naturalized, is able to vote in North Carolina, and they're going to take out the "have been naturalized" to just leave it to U.S. citizen. And that is a strategy to disenfranchise even farther naturalized citizens, and to farther down probably take this to court to say, our U.S. our state constitution says that only U.S. only a citizen of the United States can vote. And what does that mean for us? Does that mean just someone that was born in this country? Does that mean that now maybe children of migrants who were born in this country are no longer going to be considered U.S. citizens, like it is by the U.S. Constitution? So I think it's a lot bigger things that are moving forward in North Carolina, and I think they're very
You're
dangerous.
talking about this ballot initiative that will be on the ballot in November for a constitutional amendment to clarify the fact that only U.S. citizens can vote in elections. And Stephanie, I know you've been working on this, so I want to ask you some questions about this. It's already illegal for non-citizens to vote in United States elections at any level. It's in the Constitution. So this clearly isn't needed. But it does clarify some things, but it also muddies the water on some things. Is this the tip of the iceberg? In other words, is the real reason for this floating under the surface?
Absolutely, Mike. To begin with, this is part of a national strategy that we're seeing across the country to really confuse voters into this narrative around illegal voting, right? And so what we already know is that according to federal and North Carolina law, this is a non-issue. Only U.S. citizens who are eligible to vote can do so. And what we're seeing is that this is really playing under this fold of like voter fraud, creating mistrust in elections, and continue to perpetuate xenophobia and racism. And so,
So I was going to ask, what is the bottom line it for me, because we're short on time, but a yes vote. I mean, it's already illegal for non-citizens to vote. This says it's illegal for non-citizens to vote. So what would the impact of people going to the polls and voting yes on this, as opposed to no on this, be? Is there
Well,
a
that's,
negative to it?
oh, absolutely. There's a negative one. This sends a message to naturalized citizens and creates confusion about their ability to vote. So North Carolina, there's over 800,000 naturalized citizens who are U.S. citizens who have every right as any U.S.-born citizen does. There's also a lot of confusion around what this would mean for what it would mean for 16 and 17-year-olds to register to vote. There is concern around what this also means as in terms of potential stepstones to further disenfranchise voters in North Carolina. As we know, this is a trend that we've been seeing consistently over the decades of more and more rigorous processes to limit voting.
So should people vote, in your opinion,
In
should
my
people vote yes or
opinion,
no?
people should vote no for this constitutional amendment. It does nothing but continue to restrict voting in the long run.
And Jose, you're shaking your head no. That means you're in agreement with that, or you're not in agreement with that.
Absolutely. I'm terrified by this,
Okay.
the impact of this and what it will mean later on, how or what the plan is. We talk about 2025 plans and stuff like that, and this plays perfectly into that strategy.
Well, that actually plays into a question we have from one of our listeners. What are the ramifications of Project 2025 for immigrants and for naturalized citizen populations? Diego, have you given any thought to that?
Oh, yeah. A solution, what is not a solution for the economy is massive deportations. That's it's not going to help anybody. It's going to harm the economy and the social fabric of this country. So this plan of the largest internal deportation operation in the country history will be focused not on the people that just recently came, because many of the Venezuelans or Haitians, they have TPS, they are legally here. So if they have to come up with numbers, they will prosecute people that are here for years. People that are parents, workers, people that many, productive sectors depend on it. So what that piece of proposal sets is a huge and horrible a scenario for the whole country, not just for the Latino community, not just for immigrants.
I have a less than a minute left, and one of the major promises that Donald Trump continues to make is that if elected, he will engage in, these are his words, the largest deportation operation in the history of the country. What has been the reaction of Latino voters to that, and how do you explain some of them are still gravitating toward him?
Yeah, we have remembered what happened just when he was president. We have seen these raids on the streets. We have seen raids in the neighborhoods, and people were really afraid. So, of course, this notion that my parent, my friend, my neighbor can be deported. And this notion that if I'm going to the school or to my job or the supermarket, I could never come back is just horrifying. And I know that these kind of proposals are unrealistic, but when Trump was president, he tried to carry on. Also, we have these huge numbers of deportation under Obama administration. However, this is a problem for our community. This keep some people from sleeping in our community. This is real stories, real people struggling about the future. You have DACA recipients with our professionals. We are working on our economy, and they don't know what's going to happen with them in the future. So, yeah, this is a huge problem.
Diego Barahona is editor of La Noticia. Jose Hernandez Paris is chief executive officer of the Latin American Coalition. And Stephanie Arteaga is co-director of the Carolina Migrant Network. Thank you all three for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.